All right, what my plan is this evening to finish talking about the five opinions. We've gotten bogged down. We get up, I think we're right around the fourth opinion, and then we get into a deep discussion, and so we don't manage to quite get to the end of it. But what I definitely would like to do that today, and then we have only two more classes. After two more Tuesday classes, next Tuesday, I plan to talk about the Pope Honorius case, because that comes up a lot, and those who misunderstand it believe that, oh, we had a heretic pope before, Pope Honorius, and so therefore it can happen. This explains what's happening now. But that is not true at all. He was not the heretic that some say he was. There was also a couple of other popes where, the efforts have been made to paint them as heretics. Pope Liberius, Vigilius, and then Pope John the 22nd. But these are all false points. None of these popes were heretics. There was some negligence in suppressing heresy, or at most, maybe some negligence, but that is not the same thing as openly promoting heresy. Okay, so just as a quick review of the five opinions. Okay, the first opinion is basically, who can put it in just a half a sentence? Okay, Pope cannot be a heretic. Okay, and then the second opinion is. Okay, so Pope loses his office even by secret heresy. Okay, secret heresy. Okay, the third opinion is Pope remains Pope or retains his office. His office, even if he's a public heretic, even if a public, and we can also use the word manifest heretic. Okay, and of course, St. Robert Bellarmine saying wrong. Number two, wrong. Number three, wrong. Number four, Pope needs to be removed by the church from his office if what? If what? If he falls into manifest or public heresy, if falls into manifest. I use these words interchangeably, public. Public as opposed to telling one or two people or nobody at all. Public is letting everybody know. If I say something tonight to you, is that public? Right, because you can all tell somebody else, right? You should have heard what Father said at the Tuesday night class. You only hear the truth here. Okay, so if manifest or public heresy. Okay, and then number five, a manifestly heretical pope deposes himself. Sorry, my writing is a little bit on the sloppy side. I tell the students in class, I try to write neatly, but you know, you have to renew that effort. Okay, the manifestly heretical Pope deposes himself from his office. So here is the correct one. So it's no longer just an opinion. This is necessary conclusion. So, okay. As we know, as of April 3rd, at the end of last month, this open letter was published, signed by 19 clergy and philosophy and theology teachers, saying, "We accuse Pope Francis. We accuse Pope Francis of public heresy. He knows better. He knows he's contradicting past teachings, but he's still the Pope. So would you bishops please do something about it?" What they're asking the bishops to do, now mind you, most of these bishops are as heretical or worse than Bergoglio. They're fine with what he's doing. So they're asking him to warn Bergoglio, and if he doesn't shape up, to say that he has deposed himself. But what's the problem here? They're saying that right now, according to them, he's a manifest heretic, right? But he's still the Pope. So which opinion are they following? Yeah, they seem to be falling into this. They may not realize it. They think that they're going to be following number five, but by saying he's the Pope, it's like the pink elephant that they just cannot bear to address. Well, maybe he deposed himself. Have you ever thought about that? And then in their letter, they have a whole section. Oh, we can't be saved of vacantists. Well, wait a minute. Did you hear what you're saying? You're saying a manifest heretic is in the papal chair. So there's like one author for this. I think he was a canonist by the name of Boix, French. I think I mentioned him. So there's really no precedent for this. And you know that he can't be removed by the church. So this is the only position to take, you know, that, and they say he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. This is really bold. This is saying he knows what he's doing. He knows he's contradicting the past teachings of the church. He's guilty of formal heresy, but we have no authority to do anything about it. So you bishops have to do something about it. Yes. Well, it has no official status, this open letter. This is just some academics, a few clergy, and actually I think a number of other people have signed on, saying, yes, this is right. But remember, this is like the third or fourth time around. This has been going on for about 3 or 4 years now, accusing him of heresy, although this is about as bold as I've ever seen it. I'm sure that that's what the Vatican does. They just put it in the round file. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to them, they think they can afford to laugh at it, but you see, the problem is they're really not approaching it correctly. There's a really great 20-page analysis of this open letter on Novus Ordo Watch, and I'll pass it around here in a little while. And it's an open secret. It's Mario Dirksen that writes. So. But anyway, he's able to devote his entire life to promoting Novus Ordo Watch, and it's a fabulous resource. Any item you need to look up and go into detail, it's there. So anyway, it's a very serious situation. Now, at the end of this month, there's going to be a conference on the liturgy here in Spokane. Yeah, and it's put on by conservative Novus Ordo types, and the bishop of Spokane, the bishop quote unquote of Spokane, he's more conservative, so he's okay with this. And one of the organizers sent me flyers in the mail to promote this. Yeah, flyers, you know, to me, you know, to say, would I please promote it here at the Mount? Well, you know where that went. And I wrote back, I said, you know, please take us off the list. There's no way we would ever participate. And the organizer wrote back and said, would you please reconsider? Because, you know, Peter Kafsnevsky, he sees serious problems with the new Mass too, and he's going to talk about, you know, keeping to tradition. But Kafsnevsky, very Polish name, Kwasniewski, he's one of the signers of this open letter. And I said, you, I don't want to sound trite, but basically I was trying to say, you have much bigger fish to fry than worrying, you know, talking about having a reverent liturgy. Your pope is a formal heretic, according to one of your speakers. You better do something about this. I mean, you look at the problem you have. And I did get a reply back. I understand what you're saying. You know, so they're in a mess. They are in an absolute mess. The head of their church is openly leading souls to hell through heresy, and they don't know what to do about it other than write open letters and ask the heretical bishops to please do something about it. Yes. Yes. He's supposed to be a great authority, you know, and he, yeah, he's here. He's here, number three. Right, right. He tries to. I read the article on him. How he tries to. He's literally twisting Vatican I to accommodate this very. I mean, this is the worst of the five opinions, wouldn't you say? That the wolf can be there to devour the sheep, right? It makes no sense. But again, it's amazing. You start saying, you just bring up the possibility, maybe sedevacantism is wrong, or excuse me, is correct, and right away it's like, no, of all things, it cannot be the right one. I don't know what it is. Why do they have this visceral, almost violent reaction to sedevacantism? And St. Robert Bellarmine already explained it for us. And all the theologians, practically all of them before Vatican I, and certainly all of them after Vatican I, said, yeah, he's manifestly heretical pope. He's not the pope. Okay, so anyway, Peter Kafsniewski, I don't recommend his writing because he can't get this right. He can't get this right. He's over here. Okay, I want to do just a little bit of a review before we go into focus on the fourth and fifth opinions tonight. Okay, so this is all review. Ugh, this is a very tenacious eraser. It almost doesn't want to let go when I. Maybe we need to take an object lesson. Be tenacious. it's doing the job though. cleaning the board. What I want to do is just review a couple of syllogisms with you. We did this about 3 weeks ago, and it's indisputable logic. Even Professor Kosniewski would have to agree with me. Okay. So there's two syllogisms we can do here. A manifest heretic cannot be a pope. Bergoglio is a manifest heretic. Okay, so this is what we call, these are called syllogisms. I teach this in our class to the senior class. This is part of their philosophy course, and they're really getting these syllogisms, and they're enjoying them. Aristotle figured out this type of deductive reasoning like over 300 years before our Lord was born, and nobody's been able to dispute it ever since. So, by the way, this means therefore, these three dots. So what's the conclusion we can draw? By the way, this is what we call the middle term, okay? And the middle term cannot appear in the conclusion. So what's the conclusion we have to draw from this? Yes. Yes. Okay, would you like a little bit more of the logic rules here? This is what we call, see, I'll put an oval around it. That's the minor term. Cannot be a pope is the major term. And the minor term and the major term have to show up in the conclusion. It's just the middle term. You see, it's an elongated M. We do this in logic class. We take M's and we really stretch them out. So, but this is just a little class on logic, okay? And again, if I don't care who would be on that, who signed that open letter, if any of them were here today, they could not dispute me on this syllogism. It's ironclad. It's absolutely bulletproof. The only thing they could argue with me is the truth of the premises. These are the premises here. This is the conclusion. So they would argue, Kwasniewski would say, oh yes, a manifest heretic can be a pope. So you see, we wouldn't be arguing the syllogism, we'd be debating this major premise here. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so now let me do another syllogism here. Popes cannot give official heretical teaching. Okay, what do you think my minor premise is going to be here? It's going to be very similar to that. Yes. Okay, Bergoglio has given official, isn't that what the open letter is all about? He's given official heretical teaching. Oh, many times, many times. Well, he couldn't argue the validity of the syllogism. He'd be disputing the truth of the premises. Okay, so this is structured a little bit differently from this. What's my middle term here? What do you see appear twice in the premises? Okay, it'll say, here we have to include cannot. So cannot give, has given. Okay, so that's the middle term there. So Bergoglio, because we have a cannot up here, it has to show up here. What's the rest of the conclusion? Cannot be a pope. Okay, now This is the point that is made in this analysis, which I'll pass around here pretty quickly. One of these looks at him as a person. This one looks at what he does. Okay, so again, this is looking at him as a person. This is looking at what he does. Okay, I think you'll know the answer to this. Which one is the better one to use? Which should we, if you're going to give a syllogism, is this better to give or is this better to give? Very good. This one is strong. This one is more convincing. Can anybody tell me why it's better to go according to what he does rather than look at him personally? Okay, that's the very purpose of the papacy. Okay, and what alleged problem do we avoid when you're looking at him? Is how guilty he is as a person. You see, and this is where people would say, as a matter of fact, that the open letter they're saying we're going to say he's a manifest heretic, but can you bishops make double sure by warning him, and if he doesn't recant, then we'll all know for sure. So this is, I think this is very strong, but I think this is even better. Here we don't even have to climb into his mind and see what's going on. It's what he's doing. So very interesting distinction, and I really like this. This is looking more at the cause of the problem. This is looking more at the effect. So put a box around it. This one is the stronger, this is the stronger syllogism. This is still very good. I mean, how can he not be a manifest heretic? How can we say he's like a third grader who just didn't learn his catechism very well? Yeah, it just doesn't fly. But again, here people saying, you're trying to judge his thinking. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's true, but how blatant does it have to be? I mean, he said this year, all religions are willed by God. He says in Amoris Laetitia, if people cannot keep the sixth commandment, then God wants them to keep on living their sinful life until they're able to get better. Yeah. That's what Amoris Laetitia says. So they're looking at this and saying, they're kind of mixing up both. Sometimes they're looking at what he teaches. Sometimes they're looking at just who he is as a person. But again, this is ironclad. This is absolutely ironclad. They're both ironclad, but this one is like, you know, 3-inch thick iron. not even a bomb can blow it up. Okay, so any other questions before we go on to the fourth opinion? Okay, I think we can move on now. So, and we will finish this today. So you can pass this around, sister, if you want to take that. And you can download your own copy. It's all there for free on Novus Ordo Watch. I know, but it's just to pass it around in class for this evening. Okay. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit more review here. We're on page 2. Okay, the middle of page 2. The fourth opinion is of Cajetan. There he teaches that a manifestly heretical pope is not ipso facto deposed, but can and ought to be deposed by the church. Again, what's the very simple refutation? Why cannot the church depose the pope? Right. Very simple. The pope is subject to no human power on earth. If every single cardinal and every single bishop wanted to make the pope do something, because if they could, then they'd be overturning the papacy, right? You know, the way our Lord set up the papacy, it is the highest thing on earth. Remember all those titles we were studying about, the dignity of the Pope, you know, Vicar of Jesus Christ, you know, Patriarch of the West, Supreme Sovereign, you know, I mean, the fourth opinion just can't fly, because then the Pope is no longer supreme. So it has to be a very holy and a very wise and a very, very knowledgeable man who is put into that position. And he's the only one that gets this title. Actually, I should take that back. There actually are the Eastern Patriarchs that are in union with Rome. They're called Your Holiness too. I forgot about that. But in the Western Rite, there's only one person who has that title, and that's the Pope. Okay, and even the Eastern, there's four Eastern Patriarchs that are very high ranking: the Patriarch of Antioch, Jerusalem, Alexandria, and I believe not Constantinople. I don't think there's a, what is it? Antioch, Alexandria, Jerusalem. I think there's one more where they're accorded that, but so they're very high ranking, but they know they're subject to the Pope. Okay, so. Okay, you know, there's one, well, okay, let's go on to the next bottom paragraph on page 2, okay? Now, in regard to reason, this is indeed very certain. A non-Christian cannot in any way be Pope, as Cajetan affirms in the same book, and the reason, because he cannot be the head of that which he is not a member, and he is not a member of the church who is not a Christian. But a manifest heretic is not a Christian, as Saint Cyprian and many other fathers clearly teach. Therefore, a manifest heretic cannot be Pope. Oh, here's the syllogism right here. So it's, he could focus on this one, but he's saying, this for right now, I'm going to just use this syllogism here. Okay, Cajetan responds in a defense of the aforementioned treatise, chapter 25. So Cajetan is going to try to explain to us how it is that a pope can be removed. Okay, this is going to be hard to understand. So if I lose you, it's understandable. Because this gets into some very fine points of theology. So hang on to your hat, or don't, so to speak. We're going to try to understand this, but it's a little bit tricky, okay? So Cajetan is saying, since two things make a Christian, faith and the character, a heretic loses the virtue of faith but still retains the character, and for that reason still adheres in some way to the church and has the capacity for a jurisdiction. Hence, he is still pope but must be deposed, because he's been disposed due to heresy. After being disposed at the last, he is not pope. As such, he is a man and not yet dead, but constituted at the point of death. Now, I'm sure you understood that perfectly, right? Okay, I'll try to explain. Okay, so I think what Cajetan, even I'm struggling with this somewhat, so I'm, you know, not giving you the perfect expert view here. Okay, so Cajetan says we have here a pope. He falls into heresy. He's lost something, but he's not lost everything. He's still human. And in other words, and if he comes back from his heresy, can he be baptized a second time? No. So do you see what Cajetan is saying? He's lost something, but not everything. Exactly. That, yeah. 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 Right. What if a person leaves the faith, what they actually have to do even before he or she goes to confession, he or she has to be absolved from excommunication. I've done this a number of times when I brought in a Protestant that converts to the Catholic faith, and I check out their baptism, and their baptism is valid. I can't baptize that person a second time. So when that person was validly baptized as a Protestant, it's like he or she entered the church but left it at the same moment by adhering to their Protestant religion. So when I absolve them from excommunication, what I'm saying is you are now reunited to the church because you just made your profession of faith and you were absolved of your excommunication. And now you can go to the sacraments. Okay? Yes. That is exactly the abjuration of error. As far as I know, the best term for it is called the profession of faith and absolution from excommunication. Yes, and there is an abjuring or a renouncing of heresy. They do it with their hand on the Bible. I solemnly swear to be a Catholic and to accept these Catholic doctrines. Yes. Well, that's different because with Novus Ordo Catholics, if they come to us, the reason they're not required to take the abjuration of the abjuration of error and the be absolved because their intention was to be Catholic. You see? But if somebody knowingly became a Buddhist, knowingly became a Lutheran, knowingly became a schismatic, knowingly became a Methodist, knowingly became Russian Orthodox, there's no doubt as to their guilt there. All right. Oh, sister, thank you very much. Says you look after our class so well, sister. Thank you. We're well equipped with erasers. Okay. All right. So far so good. So what's Cajetan doing? He's saying the reason he can be deposed is because he's lost something, but not everything. But St. Robert Bellarmine, whose feast day was how many days ago?
Yesterday.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Our Lady appeared on the 13th of May, which was the feast day of St. Robert Bellarmine. Was Our Lady preparing us? Yes. And by the way, isn't there, doesn't that also help combat the sin of superstition that 13 is an unlucky number? Yeah, it's something we have to fight against. It's not unlucky. It's like the other numbers. It's what God intends. So also Pope Pius XII was being consecrated a bishop or an archbishop. Actually, he went straight to archbishop right when Our Lady was appearing on May 13th to the three Fatima children. At that time in Rome, he had no idea, of course. Oh, remember that video I showed you of Pope Pius XII saying a low mass? That was on his, let's see. That was on his 25th anniversary of being consecrated a bishop. So I'm going to do the math here. 1917, add on 25. And remember, it was that they actually was a date given in that was May 13th, 1942. So it was exactly, it was a silver jubilee of being consecrated a bishop. And that's during the horror of World War II. Terrible things going on. Okay, so we're at the top of page 3. We're trying to understand who? Cajetan. We're trying to understand the mind of Cajetan. Okay. Okay, but St. Robert Bellarmine is refuting him. Okay. Okay, but on the contrary, since in the first place were a heretic to remain joined with the church and act by reason of the character, he could never be cut off and separated from her because the character is indelible. Yet everyone affirms that some can be cut off from the church de facto. Therefore, the character does not make a heretical man exist in the church and act. Rather, it is only a sign that he was in the church and that he ought to be in the church. So far, I know this is very deep, but St. Robert Bellarmine is saying, let's try to understand what Cajetan is saying. Cajetan lived about 60 or 70 years before St. Robert Bellarmine, so he's already dead and buried. And St. Robert Bellarmine is respectfully analyzing his opinion. He's saying, okay, so Cajetan is saying, all right, so he lost something, but he keeps something. Okay, and you know, this is so deep, this top paragraph, that I'm just going to skip over it, because we're just going to grasp the idea that he lost something but not everything, and that's why he can be deposed. Okay. So we're looking at the middle paragraph. Okay. Cajetan responds that faith is a necessary disposition simply, but in part, not in total, and hence with faith being absent, the Pope still remains Pope on account of another part of the disposition, which is called the character, and that still remains. But on the other hand, either the total disposition, which is the character and faith, is necessary as one unit, or it is not, and a partial disposition suffices. So, let's go to the last sentence of that, another very difficult paragraph. Thereupon, those things which have the final disposition to ruin soon after cease to exist without another external force, as is clear. Therefore, even a heretical pope without any disposition ceases to be pope through himself. Okay, so Cajetan is saying he still keeps something, you know, even though he fell into this heresy, and that's why he can be removed by the church. But St. Robert Bellarmine is saying, no, it doesn't matter what the disposition is. I guess you might say Bellarmine is more objective. He says, does he have the faith? If he doesn't, he's lost the papacy. Cajetan is saying, you know, there's something in his dispositions that somehow keeps it part of the papacy there, but which can be judged by the church, but the other part he already lost. Difficult to understand, I know. Do not expect to walk out of here saying, I'm a theologian on this, I understand it. That reminds me of a story from Bishop Sheen, who gave a class on the Trinity to some converts, and the subject matter was the Trinity. And he asked at the end of the class, okay, do you have any questions? And one lady said, no, I think I understand it completely. He said, ma'am, if you understand it completely, I didn't teach it to you right. You should be confused. Let me teach it to you again. Let me confuse you some. Because we can never understand, you know, the three persons in one God fully. So I'm kind of reminded, I was just reminded of that story. Okay. Okay, so who's more subjective, Cajetan or Bellarmine? Who's focusing more on the subjective aspect? Cajetan, but Bellarmine is more objective. He's saying, look, if he doesn't have the faith, he's lost it all. He didn't keep any of it. And if he lost it all, he unpoped himself, to use an inelegant term. He unpoped himself. Yes. Yes, all right. Right. So Cajetan is making he's making a theological distinction. It's a very difficult one to understand. I can't say that I even fully understand it. So these are they love doing this. They'll go back and forth all day long, because that's what they're called to be, you know, theologians. We can say, oh, that was a nice discussion, argument. We understand a little bit of it, and it's good enough for us. Okay. So last paragraph on page 3. And this is Bellarmine now saying, look at the objective. You might want to write that down in your on your paper. You know, Cajetan is looking at it more subjectively. Bellarmine is looking at it very objectively. Okay? Next, the Holy Fathers teach in unison that not only are heretics outside the church, but they even lack all ecclesiastical jurisdiction and dignity. Cyprian says, we say that all heretics and schismatics have not power and right. He also teaches that heretics returning to the church must be received as laymen, even if beforehand they were priests or bishops in the church. Optatus teaches that heretics and schismatics cannot hold the keys of the kingdom of heaven or loosen binds. Ambrose and Augustine teach the same, as says St. Jerome. Bishops who were heretics cannot continue to be so. Rather, let them be constituted such as who were received that were not heretics. So how many authorities is Bellarmine quoting in this one paragraph? Does anybody want to count them up here? Well, let's do it all together. Who's the first one? Cyprian. Who's the next one? Optatus. Who's the next one? Ambrose. The next one? Augustine. Who's the next one? St. Jerome. Who's the next one? Pope Celestine the First. Would you call this piling up authorities in your favor? So again, St. Robert Bellarmine is being kind. He's being professional. And he's saying, Cajetan says this, but wait a minute, look at what all these are saying. He says, just by the fact of falling into heresy, they lose their membership, they lose their office. So he's being very objective in this, okay? So we're turning the page here again. Okay, start this quote on page 3. This is from Pope St. Celestine I. If anyone who was either excommunicated or exiled by Bishop Nestorius or any that followed him from such a time as he began to preach such things, whether they be from the dignity of a bishop or clergy, it is manifest that he has endured I'm trying to understand this. Okay. I'll have to paraphrase it. Basically, they're saying, what about all the people that the heretic Nestorius excommunicated? Because that's what Nestorius, it was, by the way, Christmas Day, 429 AD, the Bishop of Constantinople, in a Christmas sermon, says, Mary is only the mother of the human person of Jesus. And you see, Jesus is two persons, according to Nestorius. And there was a man who stood up right there during that, I think it was Eusebius. And he said, heretic. And he got up and left. And what St. Robert Bellarmine is saying, this is correct, because from that moment, he lost his office as bishop of Constantinople. Yes, he was excommunicating this good bishop and that good priest and condemning all these people. But he said, don't worry about it, because he lost his office from the moment he manifested his heresy. So St. Robert Bellarmine is saying, look at all these people in the past that when they manifested their heresy, the church always said they're not Catholics anymore and they lost their office. Why wouldn't that hold true of the Pope if he does the same? Well, it is, exactly. So we don't have to worry. So if today Bergoglio excommunicated me, no problem. As a matter of fact, it'd be a badge of honor. But he has no, well, actually, what we're saying is he was already a heretic long before he put on the white cassock. So, you know, so he never lost it. He just never had it. Okay, so we're almost done here. We have less than 10 minutes. So again, why did we not have to worry about the decisions of Nestorius after he professed his public heresy? Because he was still a valid bishop, but he lost the office of the Bishop of Constantinople. You see, once a priest, always a priest, you know, he can fall into heresy. He loses his office. He loses his membership in the Catholic Church. Okay, so that's the point that St. Robert Bellarmine is really driving home here. Okay, next paragraph. Nicholas I confirms and repeats the same thing in his epistle to the Emperor Michael. Next, even St. Thomas teaches that schismatics soon lose all jurisdiction, and if they do something from jurisdiction, it is useless. Okay. Middle of the paragraph. For those fathers, when they say that heretics lose jurisdiction, do not allege any human laws which maybe did not exist then on this matter. Rather, they argue from the nature of heresy. So, going back to the open letter, they're making it sound like it's canon, it's just a matter of canon law that, you know, that Bergoglio is breaking. No, divine law says you manifest your heresy, you cut yourself off. That's divine law. And we have to emphasize that point over and over again. Divine law cuts somebody off from the church because of heresy, apostasy, or schism. It's not just regular canon law. It's divine law. Divine law. Okay? So, all right, we're running out of time, so we have to keep going quickly here. Next, what Cajetan says in the second place, that a heretical pope who is truly pope can be deposed by the church and from its authority, seems no less false than the first. For if the church deposes the pope against his will, certainly it is over the pope. Yet the same Cajetan defends the opposite in the very same treatise. So Cajetan has a real problem. He basically saying the church has no authority over the pope, but what's his opinion? The church can depose the pope for heresy. So that's a contradiction. That's not good. You shouldn't contradict yourself. Okay. Okay, so but he answers the church in the very matter when it deposes the pope does not have authority over the pope, but only on that union of the person with the pontificate. So again, remember subjective, objective. Cajetan is more subjective here, but he's wrong. He's wrong. Okay. On the other hand, from the very fact that the pope deposes bishops, they deduce that the pope is above all bishops, and still the pope deposing a bishop does not destroy the episcopacy, but only separates it from that person. Secondly, for one to be deposed from the pontificate against his will is without a doubt a penalty. Therefore, the church deposing a pope against his will without a doubt to punish him, but to punish him is for a superior and a judge. So what St. Robert Bellarmine is, he's completely refuting Cajetan here. He says, we understand you're trying to make a very fine distinction and you're kind of looking at it subjectively, but it just doesn't work, Cajetan. Of course, Cajetan was already dead when St. Robert Bellarmine is writing this, but he's trying to analyze his opinion, and he said it just doesn't work. Okay. All right. So we're going to have to go to the last paragraph on page, which is middle, right about the middle of page 5. And again, this is the clincher, the fifth opinion. Now, the fifth true opinion is that a pope who is a manifest heretic ceases in himself to be pope and head, just as he ceases in himself to be a Christian and member of the body of the church, whereby he can be judged and punished by the church. This is the opinion of all the ancient fathers who teach that manifest heretics soon, better or immediately, lose all jurisdiction. And namely, St. Cyprian, who speaks on Novation, who was a pope in schism with, I think this is a mistranslation here. Well, anyway, he's talking about Novation. He was not a true pope, by the way. He was an anti-pope. But he cannot hold the episcopacy, although he was a bishop first. He fell from the body of his fellow bishops and from the unity of the church. There he means that Novation, even if he was a true and legitimate pope, still would have fallen from the pontificate by himself if he separated himself from the church. So again, St. Robert Bellarmine is using this argument over here, but we know that this is even stronger. But here he's just saying, I mean, this, he's proving the syllogism. He says, how can you be manifestly a heretic and still keep your membership? He says, it just can't happen. And if you're not, if you lose your membership, you lose your office. Okay. The same is the opinion of the learned men of our age, as John Driardo teaches. Those who are cast out as excommunicates or leave on their own and oppose the church are separated from it, namely heretics and schismatics. He adds in the same work that no spiritual power remains in them who have departed from the church over those who are in the church. Melchior Cano teaches the same thing when he says that heretics are not part of the church nor members, and he adds in the last chapter that someone cannot even be informed in thought that he should be head and pope who is not a member nor a part, and he teaches the same thing in eloquent words. Again, this gets a little bit difficult again to understand, but, you know, let's say the pope committed a terrible sin. Let's say he arranged for somebody to be murdered. If he dies in that state unrepentant, he would go to hell. And of course, he loses his pontificate when he dies. So a former pope would be in hell. But murder does not separate it from the church. But of their nature, apostasy and heresy, of their very nature, cut somebody off from the church. So again, this is Bellarmine's argument right here. And we can even, in the retrospect of Vatican II, we can even look at the effect of what a manifest heretic does sitting in the throne of Peter. This is even stronger, where we don't even have to make a judgment about what he's thinking. Ironclad, nobody in the world can dispute this. Again, they'll just only argue whether that's true or not, whether that's true or not. But they cannot dispute the conclusion. So, we finished it. We did it. We finished the five opinions, and of course the fifth one is our wonderful necessary conclusion. And we'll go into we'll bring up these irrelevant examples of alleged popes who fell into heresy. That will be our class next Tuesday, and then on the last Tuesday of May, we'll do a wrap-up of the whole year. So thank you all for coming. God bless you.